Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Board Gaming Doctor. My name is Phil, and I'll be your Board Game Doctor today. And in this very special episode, I want to do a top 10 list for you guys as a thank you for all of those who have subscribed to the YouTube channel. This is the 100 subscriber special. And so thank you first and foremost to those who have been consistent with watching videos and commenting and all of that. I do this out of the love of the hobby and the love of creation as well. Putting together videos is something that enhances my experience with this hobby. I don't promote it as much as probably I should, or, you know, try to elicit a lot of following, you know, from those who listen to the podcast or to YouTube. Mainly because I don't want this to become something that is more work than it is fun as a hobby. But I, nonetheless, you know, I really appreciate those who have interacted with me, or at the very least have subscribed to the YouTube channel, which is where I want to focus more with the content going forward. And so in preparation for this moment, hitting, you know, 100 subscribers. I know it's not a lot, but to me it means a lot. And so I thought I would want to do something a little bit different and special, and I thought of a top 10 list that I could do. And I'm doing this obviously off the cuff and just to be able to get this out quicker to you guys. At first I thought about talking about the top 10 games from every Board Game Geek page. This was a trend that was done a couple of months ago where a lot of people were listing on Board Game Geek their favorite games from every page, which is basically one game, or from the top games from 1 to 100 is one page, and then 101 to 200 is the second page, etc. And for your viewing here, I did list out some of my favorite Rosenberg and non-Rosenberg games from those top, basically the top 1,000 games listed and ranked on Board Game Geek. If you aren't familiar with my channel, just as an aside, I love board games. I try to play a lot of different board games, and I think I am able to experience that variety based off of my plays on Board Game Arena and other digital implementations of games. It's easy to try them out there. I don't have a lot of time due to life and work to play a lot of games on the table consistently, although that has changed recently. And so I mostly do digital gaming, but of the games that I do own, a good majority of them are Uwe Rosenberg games, because I think his style of gaming is what sings and just hits home for me the most. And so I tend to focus a little bit more on Rosenberg games with monthly Rosenblog videos and podcasts, and hopefully some more content, more in the strategic realm to come with those types of games. But that is the reason why you see some separation here between games like Agricola and Ark Nova as my number one games from the top 100. But I thought, you know, I have talked a lot about these games before, and I wanted to do something a little bit different and talk about some games that perhaps have not graced the podcast myself, as well as that probably deserve a little bit more attention overall in the hobby. And so this is the top 10 games, in my opinion, that are the most underrated. And the major criteria was that I rated it highly on BoardGameGeek, and that overall the rankings for these games were over 1,000. And so let's get into it and start with my number 10, and that's Transamerica. Overall, this is ranked 1,385. This is published way back in 2001. And Transamerica, if you haven't played it, is a light game where you are linking routes on a map of the United States. Think of Ticket to Ride, except without the cards or the rummy playstyle. And you basically lay down these routes to align with the contract cards or the connection cards that you have in your hand. You have different cities, one of each color, that you're trying to link up. And as soon as you have a link amongst all of those routes or those cities that you have, then the game is over, or at least the round is, because this plays really quick. And the reason that it plays really quick is that you can build off of another player's route as soon as your starting route touches theirs, which is why all of these tracks are the same color. And so each round of the game, or essentially the game, plays really quick, and you play over a few rounds to see, and you lose points based off of how far away you were from completing your contract or city cards. And so it plays really quick, it's light, it's fun, engages a lot of interaction, seeing who connects to which route first. And I've had a lot of fun. This is one game that we do own and is a lot of fun, and I think doesn't get a lot of hype, mainly because of how quick it plays, or how light the rules are perhaps, as well as other train game implementations that are a little bit more widespread, such as Ticket to Ride. And so I think Transamerica kind of lives in its shadow, although I think it was published before then, before Ticket to Ride. But anyway, my number 10 is Transamerica. Number 9 for me is Tinner's Trail. This is a Martin Wallace game back from 2000, and not 21, but originally it was published in 2008. The original one is barely above the 1000 mark. However, I think I will still count this because the redone version is almost, you know, barely over 2000. And so Martin Wallace is a designer that I do enjoy. I enjoy Brass and Via Nebula, which is another game that could potentially be on this list, but it was ranked higher than Tinner's Trail. And I liked Tinner's Trail a lot, and this is on Board Game Arena for those who want to try it out. But it's a heavy, or a strictly economic game where you are buying plots of land and prospecting the chances that you are getting to obtain things like tin and copper and things like that. And you get to build out different infrastructures like roads and boats and people to be able to mine those effectively. And all of this boils down to a very sometimes bluff-worthy experience where you prospect an area of the land and you say, hey, you know, I want to bluff and say that this area is pretty prosperous, but then when other people have bitten and made some purchases to the land and some investments there, you flip it over and it doesn't have as much tin or copper that you thought it, that they thought that it had. And so I really enjoy this game because of that interactive aspect that you have socially with other players while still keeping it as an economic game that is pretty interesting. The weight isn't as heavy, and the replayability for this game, I think, is a little bit less varied compared to other games like Brass, which is why I think it's not as overall ranked highly. But it's still a really fun game because of that economic aspect. You can play this asymmetrically pretty well on Board Game Arena, but I have a feeling that this game would work really well across the table in a live play with real people. And so Tinner's Trail makes it to my list on number 9. Number 8 is going to be Similo. This is a party-style game, ranked 1,319, and I think this does deserve to be a little bit higher, maybe because there are some, I don't know, maybe because of the different decks that you can use in this game have diluted the score or the rating. But in any case, this is also on Board Game Arena. And in Similo, you play out a bunch of these cards. Looks like some of these are based off of board games, but or board game covers. But you essentially give clues to other people that you're playing with in a party game style, saying that I have this other card that I played down, kind of like a Dixit style game where something about this card that I played from my hand is similar to or dissimilar to some of the cards out there, and everyone else has to guess which cards are not the one card that you're trying to narrow down and have everyone not kick out of being a possibility. And so this is one of my favorite kind of Dixit-style party games that I have played so far. I've played games like Mysterium and Dixit, of course, but I think this is my favorite one of them so far because it's easy for everyone to play. It's fun. It doesn't really... The one who's giving the clues, I don't feel like you're left out of the fun for too long because this game plays pretty quick versus Mysterium, where it can lag a little bit when, you know, you play out your cards and assign them and you just kind of watch everyone struggle through the clues that you gave. And so I think this one plays a little bit quicker and accomplishes what I hoped that Mysterium would. And so this is my preferred Dixit-style game, which is Similo. And it plays pretty well online if you're playing like over voice chat or something like that too. So that's number 8. Number 7 is Dominations, Road to Civilization. This is a 2019 game. This is a very, as it says here, abstracted domino-style Civ game, overall ranking just below 2,000. I really like this game, despite the abstracted nature of this game. I like the puzzle of the dominoes that you're playing out here, and you essentially place out these dominoes to gain different colored resources to spend on a huge stack of text that you can play out in front of you in your tableau. They are civilization themed. They don't necessarily you don't necessarily have like military troops trying to battle each other or anything like that. It really focuses heavily on the tech tree aspect. And this is just a small inkling of what the cards are like in this game. And that exploration into some of those technologies and building out your tableau and making sure that you have the right resources when playing those dominoes out into the main board as they line up to be able to progress your technologies is what makes this game really interesting to me. I would love to explore this game a little bit more. This is not, as far as I'm aware, available on any digital platform, so for me it's hard to get to. But I really enjoyed the plays that I've had of Dominations. I've returned to it even so when I've had the chance, and so I really enjoy this game. I understand why it may not be as highly rated because of the abstract nature of this game, but I think it's a well-done game that is fun to look at and play. So that's 10987. Number 7 is Dominations. Number 6 is going to be The Wolves, and you may have heard about this. I've reviewed this on the channel in the past, and I think these next couple of games might be a little bit more familiar to those who have been longtime listeners or viewers. But I am surprised that The Wolves has not, as a 2022 game, risen above the 1,000 mark. It's still 1,130. This game is available on Board Game Arena, which is where I've gotten most of my plays, although I did play it and demoed it when it did come out a couple years ago. But this is an abstract game where you are trying to build out your own pack of wolves. You travel across the map, the modular map, gaining different resources, eating different animals that you're trying to hunt to gain, extra moves. And you're trying to also build out your packs, your lairs, and things like that to have the most influence in different areas when intermittent and scoring happens, and that happens 3 times or 4 times over the game. I think it's 3. And the cool thing about this game, too, is that as far as interaction goes, is that you can assert your dominance over other players as well. If they have a lone wolf and your alpha wolf has reached its the area that it can assert its influence, and you can basically swap out one of your reserve wolves for theirs and decrease the amount of wolves that your opponent has. And so it's a very interactive game. You're always looking over your shoulder to see where other people or other players are at and trying to keep your wolves together, but also spread out and go to those different areas that, because each area of the board scores at different times. And so you're moving your animals around consistently. And so so there's a lot of good puzzle here, and I've really enjoyed my plays of it. and it's a shame that it is not higher on everyone else's list collectively. And so that's my number six, The Wolves. Number five is Rolling Realms for me. This one's barely outside of the 1,000 ranking mark. From 2021, this is obviously Jamie Stegmaier's Rule and Write game that he came up with during the pandemic. And I've really enjoyed this. This is probably my favorite Rule and Write. One, because of the puzzle nature of it. What you do on your in the game is that you combine three of these realms together in a random order, and you play over nine turns within a round, and you roll some dice, you mitigate those dice depending on the resources that you have here, you collect them during the round itself, and you spend them as such as free actions, all in the hope of crossing out these various requirements that these games have to get stars, and that's how you get points in the game. The two things that I love about this game are, first, the flexibility that you have with these resources, which add a lot of decisions to be made on how to spend those resources to maximize each of these different puzzles. And the second thing, obviously, is that these games, or these modules, are representations of mechanisms and themes of very popular games, both in and outside of Stonemaier. And so I love, for example, bringing a little bit of Wingspan into this game, you know, or Tapestry, you know, games that I've really come to enjoy. And I love that this game has expanded to other franchises as well, including a lot of Rosenberg games. And so for that reason alone, is enough for me to, you know, take interest in it. But the gameplay has really stuck for me, and it has been a good hit among my friends in real time. I do own this game, have played it, and they really enjoy the crunchy math of that this game provides. And so this is my favorite Roll and Write thus far, I think, and that's Rolling Realms. That's my number five. Number four is Mercator. So a couple of Rosenberg games back to back here. The first one being Mercator. This one's 1,500. All the way, you know, dating all the way back to 2010. I know this game is not a looker, and I've recently reviewed this game, and so you can check out my thoughts there. But this game is really, really smart, I think. There are so many different aspects about, you know, it is kind of a pick up and deliver type of game, which is unique among Rosenberg's game offerings. But I really like the straightforwardness of the pick up and deliver aspect. But at the same time, it does feel unique with the way that you can store your cubes, how each colored cube defines something different as well. The progression that you have with the orders that you're trying to fulfill as well. Fulfilling a lower costed contract allows you the access to higher and harder ones to fulfill, which offer more money and more abilities to buy buildings and boost the amount of points that you have by the end of the game. All of this considering, too, the aspect of time as you progress to and fro on this map, which is also interactive because you can piggyback on someone else's turn. If they go to a certain city, you can spend your own time tokens to take advantage of where they are located and fulfill your own contracts there. And so you're always paying attention to where other people are going, and there is relatively little downtime because of that. But you're also, as the player yourself, taking turns, you are deciding whether to spend, you know, time tokens in a certain sense, which is also one way that the game can end. And so a lot of different factors here that make this game feel very unique in the pick up and deliver and kind of order fulfillment, contract fulfillment realm of Euro-style games. And once again, despite the look of it, it doesn't look very appealing on the table. It plays really well, and so mechanically, I think you can. I don't think you can go wrong with Mercator, and there are so many different ways to play it too that make it a little bit interesting and can cater to what you and your table, your game group can do. And so I love Mercator. And number three is Atiwa as well, or Ediwa. This is a 2022 game that hasn't broken the 1,000 mark, and I believe it should, because this is a pretty well-oiled Rosenberg game that utilizes worker placement in a way that is pretty standard among other Rosenberg games, such as Newsfjord and others that have transcended into the upper echelons of game rankings. But in this game, you have a very thematic tie-in to harboring bats and trying to train families to have those bats inhabit their village and the surrounding terrain tiles. And you can utilize those bats to turn fruit into more trees, basically, which give you more points at the end of the game and so forth. There's a lot of push and pull amongst the different resources in this game, and all the while trying to figure out how to feed your family, you know, what to sacrifice there, and balancing the pollution act as well. As you increase your population, there are increased chances for them to not be trained and to, as a result, harbor more chances to gain pollution, which decrease the amount of tiles that you can play, or resources that you can play onto your tableau. And so I think that people have not really turned to this game because the worker placement aspect isn't as varied and as nuanced as, say, A Feast for Odin or other games like that. The only differences in variability is found in this sliding track. And in addition to that, too, the rounds are pretty much the same, or the goals for each round are the same as far as what you need to accomplish to breed your goats or your wild animals, or even increase the amount of families that you have. And so while the variability of this game is somewhat limited compared to his other games that harbored lots of different tiles or cards to add to that, there is variability in the terrain tiles in this game. But I think the worker placement mechanisms here work really well. The resource management, of course, but also the thematic tie-ins as well. And I've talked about this game as ad nauseum before on the game on the channel, and the solo game for Ediwa is one of my favorites among Rosenberg's games. I think that the challenges are really challenging and allow you to explore this game and view it at different angles that you probably hadn't thought about when playing this game multiplayer. So Ediwa is a game that I think should be a little bit higher on everyone else's list. So that's number three. Number two is Lowlands. I've recently covered this game, so I'll reserve most of my thoughts to that video, which came out about a month ago, or earlier this month. And so Lowlands is probably the best non-Rosenberg farming game that I've played, and that I think everyone has agreed that has come out as well. It's almost at the over the 1,000 mark here, as you can see, and so it barely fits, but I mean, a 7.4 out of 10 isn't bad, but I think this game deserves a lot more because of the solid, you know, Euro-style mechanisms that are in play here with worker placement on your personal tableau, tableau building as well, variable tiles that you can play out onto your board. But above all, the interaction in this game is unique amongst all of the even the Rosenberg games, but also among all of the Euro games that I've really tried so far, as far as to the best of my knowledge. As you semi-cooperatively try to build out this dike to prevent this water, the cascading water from the tide rippling through and having negative aspects to everyone's game, basically. And so this game can have two different outcomes based off of how well or how well you did not place the or build out the dike to prevent the tides. And so there's a lot of storytelling elements that comes from this heavily, you know, mechanical Euro game because of that one aspect of this game, which a lot of this is tied around. And so because of that more story and thematic element, this game really feels unique. I know, and I've mentioned it on the on the channel as well with my review that the mechanisms can feel a little bit rote. I wish there was a little bit more variety in this game, but nonetheless, I think the storytelling aspect of this game, not strict, you know, storytelling like other storytelling games, but the stories that you can tell after the game is done, and having, you know, an experience that you can share with those that you played it with, I think is one of the best out of Euro games. And so Lowlands is really good, and I think it deserves a higher spot than this. But my number one game for this list of the most underrated game is Age of Civilization. I've talked about this game a lot. It's sitting right now at 1,630 with only a 7.1 score overall. Of note, the designer Jeffrey CCH has and his team have kickstarted recently another Civilization-themed game called Epochs, which I want to review and give you my thoughts on this channel. So as a spoiler and a heads up, that's what I'm going to be doing next, or in the near future. But Age of Civilization, which is playable on Board Game Arena, is a very kind of a tiny epic type of game where it's really small and quick. It's a really small box. I own the box because I played this game so much on Board Game Arena and I think this is more of a deluxe version of it. But you essentially traverse over six rounds over, you know, a civilization themed type of deck or type of game where you are building out, you know, or researching different technologies, which can be variable, building wonders, which are variable as well, and acquiring different societies or cultures that which give you variable powers that break the game in different ways. And the sheer amount of cultures that you can play with in this game, of which you can only have three during a game, makes this game feel very different every time. And the order in which you can take actions is varied as well from game to game. So what you focus on per game, if you want to focus more on conquest and military, you can. Some other games you're heavily focusing on wonders, or you're doing a lot of research, or a little bit of all of it, you know, during from each game to game. And so there are a lot of different ways that this game can feel different, and it plays really quick for such a crunchy game. The decisions that you make have a lot of impact because you only get a certain amount of actions in the game as a whole. And so this is, I think, a masterpiece of kind of a micro game design where it's a small box. The rules aren't as heavy as you might think. I mean, here in the background, you can play this on a table on a plane, basically. And so it's really small, but it packs a lot of weight and punch for what it accomplishes to be. And so I'm really excited to try Epochs in their next game in a more civilization themed type of style. But even if I like it or not, I know that I can come back to this game and really have a good time and play a really quick civilization themed game that I really enjoy. And so Age of Civilization tops out my list of games that I feel like are the most underrated. So thank you for sticking around and viewing this list. Once again, thank you for all of those who have subscribed. I'll make a plug here. I usually don't, but if you enjoy this content, please subscribe for more if you enjoy it and want to listen to more. But thank you all to those who have interacted with me and given me good feedback as well as positive reinforcement. It really helps me feel energized to keep making these videos and to enhance my experience with the hobby with board games. So thank you again. Thank you for consulting with me today, and hope that you schedule an appointment with us real soon. Take care.